Hello and welcome to the opening bell. It's the first episode of 2016. My name is Matt Christie, alongside my colleague John Denon. John, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
2015 went by in a flash.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I'm rapidly approaching 40 years old.
You don't look it, Matt.
I flipping do. Right, okay, so 2015 on the whole was, I think, a good year all round.
Yeah.
Excellent year. Whether or not you're entertained by Mayweather Pacquiao, the fact that they eventually got it on, I thought was a success. We're still waiting to see who will take over from those two in terms of a worldwide star, but there's a promising bunch of contenders. And here in Britain, what more could we ask for? You can make the argument, which I agree with to an extent, that there are too many world titles floating around. It's a bit easier now to fight for a world title than it was 15 years ago. But
it's nice that so many of them are over here.
Exactly. We've got a, I think boxing, perhaps not booming, but the signs there that we really are approaching a golden era in the sport.
Yeah, I think there's loads of British talent, but I would say one thing 2015 was missing is that while we had actually quite a few international mega fights, we didn't have a major fight on British soil. You know, we didn't have a Froch Groves, we didn't have a British stadium filler. But having said that, the sort of the 2012 generation of 2012 Olympians is kind of coming through, with Joshua being a big draw in London, and even though Luke Campbell suffered a loss, he did not fill a stadium, but did have an open air stadium show up in Hull. But we didn't have a sort of, you know, a mega football stadium fight that this time last year we thought we were going to get.
Yeah, but they haven't been that common over time. And we've got one coming up, haven't we? Really, like a huge show. Okay, it's not a stadium, but Quigg Frampton is a huge show.
Absolutely.
And I think any boxing fan, wherever their loyalties lie, wherever they're from, will be very excited about that collision. It was announced, though, I mentioned Manny Pacquiao just now. It's been announced over the Christmas period that Manny Pacquiao will come back on April 9 in Las Vegas, MGM Grand, against Timothy Bradley, a guy who most people would say he's beaten twice. The judges disagreed the first time round. It's, if you were to look at the rankings and they'd never fought before, you would say it was a decent return for Manny Pacquiao after such a high profile loss in May last year, to come back after 11 months out and fight one of the best welterweights in the world in Timothy Bradley. Delve a little deeper, they've fought before. I thought the second fight was more entertaining than the first, though neither has been a classic. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, Bradley is still one of the top welterweights, so it's, you know, it's probably a more competitive fight than Mayweather-Berto.
Yeah, it's a good way of looking at it.
But it's just, given that Pacquiao has beaten him twice before, it's kind of, are people going to be that interested? And I thought Pacquiao's second win over him was a really good performance, and that sort of helped that was quite crucial for bringing Pacquiao back to the top, back to the point where, you know, the Mayweather fight came alive again. But we've sort of been there and done that, and I think there are more appealing options out there. Obviously, you know, we've spoken and written about Pacquiao versus Amir Khan quite a lot. That would have been really good. Adrian Broner was floated as an opponent for Pacquiao, and I know he's less deserving than Tim Bradley, but because he's new and because he's a character, and because everyone would love to see Pacquiao beat him up, that would have been quite good.
There were certainly better options there, weren't there, in terms of from a fan's point of view.
But I think once the fight happens, it'll get interesting. I think Bradley is more vulnerable now. I think Jesse Vargas hurt him. And if Jesse Vargas can do that, I'm sure Manny Pacquiao can. And if Pacquiao knocked him out, suddenly people wouldn't be, you know, people wouldn't want it to be the end of Pacquiao's career, would they? It would suddenly reinvigorate him. And there'll be a lot of demand to see him go on. So it could end up being quite an explosive fight.
It could do. I'm at this stage of Pacquiao's career, I'm kind of concerned that motivation might be a problem for him. It's a guy that, irrespective of what happened at the conclusion of the first fight with the scorecards, it's a guy that he's been in with twice before, and he'll feel that he's beaten fairly comfortably twice before.
Yeah.
He's what, 37 years old now? He's been boxing professionally for 20 years.
He's had the Mayweather fight now. He hasn't got that like target to be working towards. What's he got left to fight for?
Without analysing things too deeply, and I completely take on board kind of what you've said about Bradley being more vulnerable and what have you. It also wouldn't surprise me if Pacquiao lost a lackluster but deserved 12-round decision. He's at that stage of his career now. But because it's Pacquiao, it will generate interest. But you can see that there was probably a lot of interest around, I thought there'd be more interest around the rematch than there was. I don't think it did particularly, from memory, I don't think it did particularly great numbers at the box office.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine this will do any more than that.
Would Pacquiao Terence Crawford have done particularly well?
Again, I mean, for the hardcore fan, I think we'd probably rather see that. I think if Pacquiao was going to go out and lose to somebody, it would be nice to see him kind of passing the torch in a way.
Yeah, it'd be a more meaningful fight in boxing terms.
And that could really elevate Terence Crawford into being kind of, you know, potentially the next boxing superstar. But Timothy Bradley probably is, to the casual fan, particularly in America, better known than Terence Crawford. And, you know, probably more charismatic.
He's fought pretty much everyone, hasn't he, Bradley?
Yeah.
You know, other than Mayweather, he's fought everyone.
Yeah, and he's... I mean, you can't begrudge him this payday. But he's, what, 32? He's 32 himself, and as you said, he hasn't... You know, I was watching the highlights of the Provodnikov fight again the other day, and goodness me, he took some punishment in that.
Yeah.
We all know the effects that had on him for a while. You know, well publicised. And as you said, the Jesse Vargas fight where he was all at sea at the end. And
how much can we read? Because he beat Brandon Rios most recently, but Rios wasn't really at the races in that fight. I'm not sure it was the sort of triumph for Teddy Atlas it's been presented as.
Teddy Atlas, though, will be well up for this one.
He will be.
He's good value, I suppose, isn't he? He'll be interested in the lead-up.
Yeah, I missed this famous fireman's speech. Given that I was watching the fight, what was I doing? And I nodded off between...
Well, this is the thing. I mean, the cynical may say he's already got some speeches prepared for the between rounds of the Manny Pacquiao fight. But, I mean... If nothing else, Teddy Atlas reads the game better than almost anyone out there, and he will be well aware of what Manny Pacquiao's faults are.
What Pacquiao's faults?
what Bradley perhaps did wrong in the... There was a point in that rematch where I thought... My memory of that rematch is Bradley fought completely the wrong fight. He fought with too much heart. There was just no game plan there. And there were times where I thought if he'd taken a little step back, there was an opportunity there for him to win that fight. But maybe I'm doing Pacquiao a disservice.
So you're Team Bradley on this one?
I'm not in any team. I think everyone that has been around boxing for the last few years has got a soft spot for Manny Pacquiao. It would be lovely to see his journey continue. But I think at the age of 37, his days are certainly numbered at this level. Whether or not he's got one more mega fight in him, and let's be honest, this isn't a mega fight, whether he's got one more mega fight left in him, I think we'll get a pretty good indication of that on April the 9th. So for that reason, it's perhaps a worthwhile exercise.
Alright.
What else has been going on?
David Haye's back.
He takes on Mark Tomori a week tomorrow, or on January 16th. It's a return that has been mentioned and floated about for well over a year.
We spent all 2015, like, you know, we did some interviews with him. We were expecting the comeback in 2015.
Yeah, we were. I'm just before we came in to record this, I was subbing our preview for the fight, and it's the guy that I asked to do the preview for us was Elliot Wurzel, who was really, really, really close friends with Haye for the best part of a decade. Was his he wrote an excellent book.
He's his biographer, isn't he?
He's his biographer on David, and you know, I won't say what's said in there, but it's a fascinating insight into David Haye, and a really interesting look at the fight that's approaching. The interesting news over Christmas was that the fight will be broadcast on Dave. It will come at no extra cost. It's not on a pay-per-view platform, it's not on Box Nation, it's not on Sky Sports. Anyone with Freeview or what have you can watch this fight. It's a curious move to what has been a curious comeback thus far, before he's got in the ring. Kevin Campion of Goodwin Promotions, who were looking after the undercard, made a good point, because there was a lot of kind of cynicism about the fact that it's on Dave. And he kind of said that well, you know, if it had been on pay-per-view, everyone would have moaned. The fact that it's on Dave, now everyone's moaning, you're just not going to be happy. And that's quite a concise description of some boxing fans' minds, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not bad that it's on a free-to-air channel that hopefully plenty of people can see. It's good to get boxing out there. It's just that Dave hasn't done a live boxing event before, and so when, you know, even like Channel 5, Box Nation, Sky, you've got, you know what you're sort of going to get with the whole broadcast and analysis. I don't know what Dave, the home of witty banter, is going to be like showing a boxing event, but you know, it could be good, it could be hilarious.
It's certainly a bizarre platform for David Haye's return, and certainly begs the question that who else was offered the contest before Dave? How much did Dave have to pay to show the contest, and did they beat any rivals?
Yeah, like, are Dave going to be showing regular boxing events?
Yeah, yeah. And I do think a lot of it probably is to do with this all been resolved before Christmas, then perhaps it may not have ended up on this platform, but we only found out that it was on Dave this week, less than the fortnight to go before the fight, and perhaps some more established channels, without wishing to be disrespectful to Dave.
I actually watched Dave.
Yeah, I've been known to watch Dave.
I watched Dave Gorman's Modern Life is Goodish.
But I think that the likes that we just mentioned there of you know, Channel 5 and places like that, and ITV, which are also rumoured, probably need more than 10 days notice to get their scheduling sorted out.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's been a long, long process. But
I was at the press conference to announce the comeback, and so David Haye's got these new promotional partners called the Slaughter Brothers, that I guess is like an entertainment company that I hadn't heard of before. They were talking about how they're going to do everything different, and they had a plan maybe being on a free-to-air channel is sort of part of their plan, and they think that promoting it through social media and other channels, they can get good numbers and that it's going to work for them trying to do something differently. So it's not, I mean, it's not the end of the world that they're doing something new and different. It's just there's no. going to be cynicism out there that it's going to work. And also, when you look at it, there's quite a lot going on in London at the end of January. There's a Frank Warren show at York Hall. There's a Matcham show at the Copper Box with George Groves on it. So is Day to Day still a big enough name to sort of get the attention he needs to make that show work?
Maybe not at the moment, but I think if he looks fantastic in this fight, which I suspect he'll certainly look explosive, then I think the interest could start to snowball, because then when he's actually got a fight under his belt, perhaps he's in a better position to start calling out the likes of Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury. When he hasn't fought for 3.5 years, those when you're calling people out that are active and at the very, very top of their game, it can sound a little
needy. Since he's been away, the heavyweight scene has changed a lot. So, back a few years ago, if people were bored of Vladimir Klitschko, David Haye was both one of the most competent other heavyweights out there and probably the most exciting heavyweight in the division. Now we've got a lot of excitement in the heavyweight division. There's not, there's Deontay Wilder banging people over, there's Fury, the new champion, doing as Fury does, and there's Anthony Joshua rising up in Britain. So there's been a lot. It's not like it was 3 years ago.
No, it's not. And if David Haye is anything like the fighter he was, I mean, from purely from an entertainment standpoint, and also from looking at his ability, he's one of the, in my mind, one of the best fighters Britain's produced over the last 10 or 15 years. He's an exceptional talent.
And how Shane McGuigan's worked with him is going to be really interesting to see.
It really is. It really is going to be fascinating. You know, there's a lot of talk that David Haye has never been this fit. Talk like this, of course, is common in boxing.
But he does look in shape on the.
He always looked in shape, didn't he? Really. Perhaps against John Ruiz, there was a little bit of excess baggage going on there.
Well, I think that was the first Hey fight I covered for Boxing News, and so maybe that shaped my view of him.
But he's I think if his reasons for coming back, and which are to kind of come back and win the world heavyweight title, genuine and are a real driving force behind him, I think he could certainly prove himself to be one of the top two or three heavyweights in the world. And by the end of the year, a Haye Fury fight could be absolutely off the scale. But Haye, I think, will need more than a one or two round knockout over Mark Demory to get the public interest and get the public back behind him.
They had Haye and George Groves both in their comeback bouts, but on the same show. That would have been like a massive event, I reckon.
It would have been. You should be a promoter.
All right, mate. I've already, I keep making fights. Haye, I know, and you like Wilder to keep... would be good. Haye Wimbledon is inspiring.
Haye Wilder, yeah, that's something that David Haye said, that he'd welcome that fight.
Presumably, Haye is still well known in the States.
Yeah, of course, you must be. I think my only concern is that if people are expecting the David Haye that walked away 3.5 years ago, he doesn't exist anymore. He surely can't exist anymore at the age of 35, 3.5 years away. Whatever tremendous shape he's in, if he comes back and he's better than he was 3.5 years ago, then he will be the first fighter in boxing history to do that at this age.
So you're saying you don't get better with age?
Not when you're not fighting as well. But the other way of looking at it is, look at Muhammad Ali, look at George Foreman even, who were, they were out of the ring for 3.5 years. When they returned, they had successful part twos, but they had to tailor their styles to cope with their advanced age.
So what you're saying...
What I'm saying is that even though Muhammad Ali wasn't as good as he was first time round, even though George Foreman wasn't as good as he was first time round, they were able to be excellent fighters by reinventing themselves.
So you're saying David Haye is like a combination of Muhammad Ali and George Foreman?
That is exactly what I'm saying. Fast and powerful. But no, I mean, I think we should watch David Haye's return closely, but let's not expect too much at this stage.
I'm on holiday that weekend, mate.
Okay, right, so what else? In regards to heavyweight, we've got Deontay Wilder.
How do you feel about Arthur Cyzbilka?
Not a lot, to be honest. What about you?
I've actually been to see him fight. He seemed all right. I think he fought in Chicago on the Badu Jet.
Tell us more.
It was late. I was ready to go home by the time he was on.
Yeah. Can he beat Deontay Wilder?
If... What's his name to help us can sort of give Wilder problems? Anyone can beat him. But then it could be the fight that Wilder lands one of his crazy haymakers and starches him and everyone is, and he's back.
That's what he needs, isn't he? Yeah. This time last year I thought he looked good against Bermain Stiverne, and then answered a lot of questions about his stamina and everything else. And then, two highly underwhelming, albeit pretty entertaining, defences against what was largely perceived to be inferior opposition.
I think Spilka, if I'm pronouncing his name right, is going to be, he's a little bit better an opponent than the last two, but not the sort of top level kind of person Wilder should be fighting now as a champion, whether it's the Povetkin fight or one of the other champions.
There's also, I mean, before we move on, Deontay Wilder, if he does, it's weird how he's gone, has won the championship and he's gone backwards almost, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Because I think we were both quite excited about his prospects for the coming year. But if he can get back on form, he's a fantastic addition. I mean, who wouldn't want to see Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder, for example? But on the undercard of that is something I'm really not interested in, to be honest, but the vacant IBF title fight.
Yeah. We're going to get another heavyweight champion.
So there will be, and then there were three.
Yeah.
What do we know about the combatants? Charles Martin is one. He's going to be the underdog. What do we know anything about Charles Martin? From what I've seen, he's not overly impressive.
No, I saw him stopping Tom Dallas in a round in New York. But that was a first round stoppage, but it wasn't that impressive. Like, I was quite concerned for Tom Dallas before the fight because Charles Martin's a puncher, he's got quite a lot of knockouts. And he was halted in the first round, but he wasn't sort of obliterated. So whereas, Glasskopf's been, he's been sort of up, he's been highly rated for quite a long time now, so he's been up there. I would have just rather seen, so Glasskopf is a worthy world title challenger.
I'm
not sure Charles Martin has really done that much to
be
there, but he is a sort of a personality. But I would just much rather have seen Glasskopf wait to be the, he would have been a good mandatory challenger for the heavyweight champion, who is Tyson Fury.
Do we expect the winners of these two fights to fight each other? Does that seem to be the plan, the fact that they've been put on the same bill?
I don't know. You've got to think they're both being showcased. So not only do you get, and then their fight can be a world title unification, it would mean Wilder wouldn't have to fight Alexander Povetkin, because winning unification overrides that.
But then, I don't know, maybe that would mean, but maybe the WBC wouldn't care for that and strip Wilder of his title and Pelec would fight some.
Maybe. Is it all part of America's cunning plan to fool the public that they've actually got the world heavyweight champion by getting Deontay Wilder to win two of the belts?
I think so, yeah.
Because I think, yeah. You know, I saw like a Showtime interview with Wilder, and they were calling him the heavyweight champion of the world. They did talk about Fury eventually, but they were talking about Wilder as the champion. And yeah, it's going to be a hard temptation to resist just saying, yeah, we've got the champion. Everyone knows Team GB is the champion.
Well, there's no doubt about it, is there?
Yeah.
I think the heavyweight division, out of all others, must be. You know, just to have one champion, it's so precious, it's so important, I think, to the sport. And this time last year, we were talking about the prospect of there being one champion. Okay, Deontay Wilder's won. Surely now they get his Klitschko and this. But we've seen, and as we've seen with the IBF stripping Fury, we've seen how hard Klitschko was working just to keep the three titles that he had together.
Yeah, and it also explains some of the totally random opponents Klitschko
took, and now and again
just to fill his satisfy his obligations.
So, but it's an interesting time. It is an interesting time for the heavyweights. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we're about to see a return of the 1970s golden era, or probably not even the 1990s era. But there's a lot of promise there. There's a lot of promise there in the heavyweight division, and I think by the end of the year there could be some huge matchups. And as much as I'd like to see Tyson Fury kind of defend his title over here in a big fight, there's a part of me also that would like to see Tyson Fury as world heavyweight champion defending his title over in America somewhere. Las Vegas or something like that. I think that would be fantastic for Tyson. And is the world ready for Tyson Fury?
Do you think we'll have a unified heavyweight champion by the end of this year?
No, I fear that the situation could even get worse, but hopefully we'll have plans where we can see. I think it would make sense if Wilder and, let's say, Glazkov were to fight. And then you've got that side of things sorted out. Tyson Fury here, then there's just two again. If that is the plan, then okay, let's get that resolved by the summer. And then we'll start planning for probably early next year. But you
could see four different people holding heavyweight titles.
It's feasible, isn't it? It really is. And, you know, Klitschko undoubtedly paid people a lot of money to kind of keep various, probably paid people around him to negotiate with the various governing bodies to keep everyone happy. And his business mind and everything else was a crucial part of his success. And I'm not, you know, perhaps the other champions haven't got that around them.
Yeah. And plus Klitschko had years at it as well to like figure it out and build relationships with the sanctioning bodies.
Yeah.
And he did, before the Fury fight, he did mention about how it's, you know, a big job with his, you know, with his lawyer, with his management team and all that stuff to hold those titles together. And to be fair to Klitschko, he didn't, you know, during his championship reign, he sort of fought, as well as the random guys, all the best people out there. He took the Fury fight, he took the Povetkin fight, he took Kubrat-Pulev.
Completely. I don't think you can criticise what Klitschko's done. I think some of the criticism he's received as a consequence of losing to Tyson Fury is unjust. And I think the vast majority of people that are saying it so loudly have been waiting for Klitschko to lose for the best part of 10 years so they could come out and shout from the rooftops about how rubbish he is.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, that really, really annoys me. Speaking about Klitschko, we've kind of glossed over the fact that he's not going to win the rematch with the chat we've had here.
Yeah. You know?
Surely it wouldn't be that much of a shock for the fighter who just lost one of the biggest upsets of last year to win the rematch. That's what happens after upsets, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's sort of,
you know, with hindsight, you could see why the judges were giving the rounds to Fury. But at the time, because neither of them were landing that many punches, it was quite close. You know, waiting for the decision, I really thought they were just going to give it to Klitschko. Not only because it was in Germany, but just because I thought there was enough to make the case for the Vladimir Klitschko win. So, but on the other hand, he is quite old. He's got to change a lot. He didn't get close to hurting Fury. Fury's going to be even more confident and can probably do what he did, but even better.
You would think that, wouldn't you? You would think that even if Klitschko can improve a bit, which is logic would say it's unlikely, but even if he can, even if he can put a better game plan together, even if he's got a better understanding of what Tyson Fury's going to do and he can improve a bit, you would think that Tyson Fury can improve a bit more.
Oh yeah.
And
he's a lot younger, Tyson Fury.
He's a lot younger. You would also, and kind of what you've just said there, is that Fury's got, he will now know that Klitschko, he perhaps won't have, he won't be overly respectful in the early going and really feel that he's going to win and he can stop him. And I think, I mean, for me, I suspect that Fury will win. But we have seen it before in the past where champions can, they can not roll back the clock, but they can just get one last performance out of their aging bodies.
Yeah.
And I mean, who knows? I mean, this could be an aberration. Maybe Klitschko has got two or three years left, but the evidence suggests, with the fights that you were at last year against Brian Jennings first of all and then Tyson Fury, that Klitschko is getting old. And we've been expecting it for a while. Someone with that physique, with that fighting style, they don't go on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
They're not like a crafty Bernard Hopkins type style that could go on. I think, to be honest with you, if Floyd Mayweather, for example, was to come back, he could feasibly go on for quite a while. He could adapt his style and be crafty James Toney-ish and Bernard Hopkins-ish.
Yeah, 'cause he's so clever and so and whereas, like, Klitschko just doesn't have the same kind of fluidity as those guys.
No.
He had his very effective pattern, worked really well against, you know, using his height and reach advantages. When those in the gate were negated about Fury, and Fury was tall but also knew how to use those advantages.
Yeah.
And Klitschko seemed to run out of ideas then. Have we, you know, we've never seen him beat a taller man boxing like Fury, have we?
No.
So he's got to come up with a whole new style, which I think is pretty hard to do when, you know, your habits, your training practices, your routines are all ingrained.
Exactly.
He's got to go and change everything.
Exactly. And although we can't doubt Klitschko's strength of mind, the fact that he came back after a defeat, which undoubtedly will have shocked him, but 3 or 4 days afterwards, he did that video, right, this is what I want. I want the return. So we don't doubt Klitschko's strength of mind. However,
and he's come back from defeat before.
He has come back from defeat before, but, you know, they could perhaps be they were knockout defeats, weren't they? So what I'm saying is that in this fight, sorry, in the first fight, say after two or three rounds with Tyson Fury, you might be thinking, right, okay, it's fine. I'll be able to figure this out after 12 rounds, or if Tyson Fury can't keep this up for 12 rounds, I'll get to him in the end. If after 3 or 4 rounds, exactly the same pattern, he's having exactly the same problems, kind of that mindset before where he was thinking, I'll be able to get over this, at the back of his mind, nagging away, I'll say, well, you couldn't do this before, you can't beat this man.
Yeah.
And however strong the mind is, if there's a voice like there nagging away at it, you just don't know what's going to happen with Klitschko. I think the rematch, for all those reasons, is fascinating. I don't think either of us are expecting it to be fight of the year contender, but I think it's a crucial fight in the heavyweight division at the moment, and it's a crucial fight in heavyweight history. very, very often, more often than not, when a dominant champion loses, they have a rematch with the guy that beat them. And more often than not, the guy that beat them wins again.
But what song is Tyson Fury going to sing?
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. I think on that note.
What would you sing if you'd just beaten Vladimir Klitschko?
I don't know what I'd sing. I used to sing Losing My Religion by R.E.M. when I was at university at the karaoke.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
How times have changed, though.
Well, I reckon I could still belt it out, if needs be. Don't think I'd sing that, though, if I beat Vladimir Klitschko. But I think we'll leave. I think that's as good a point as any to leave this week's chat on before it descends into chaos. So, Happy New Year to everyone. Thanks for your appreciated and unrivaled support in 2015. We hope 2016 is going to be even better. And you're out of the office next week.
Yeah.
From, you're not in on Wednesday?
Not in on Wednesday.
Okay, so chances are we won't be back now for 2 weeks.
Do you want me to phone in from Dublin?
Only if you're completely annihilated.
Not a problem.
Okay, so that would be, yeah, that would be good. That would be good.
I've got some things in my mind.
Okay, so thanks everyone, and we will be back again before too long.